Welcome, everyone, to another edition of SCRC's Let's Talk Caregiving podcast. I'm your host, Roberto Velasquez, President and CEO of SCRC, and I'm here, as always, with my co-host, Marta Rañón, Executive Vice President.
Hey, Roberto.
Hey, Marta. Today, we have two special guests, Sandra Black, suicide prevention expert and consultant for the Each Mind Matters mental health movement and the Know the Signs social marketing campaign, and Jenica McEwen, SCRC's very own licensed clinical social worker and clinical supervisor, has been with the organization for over 12 years now at Southern Caregiver Resource Center. Welcome, everyone.
Thank you.
Hi.
We are thrilled to have you join us today as we want to talk about a very, very heavy topic. While an extremely difficult topic to discuss, suicide is a major public health problem in the United States. It is the 10th leading cause of death in America, and reports show that suicide rates among older persons are on the rise. In fact, it's such a major health problem that the whole month of September is dedicated to National Suicide Prevention Month. So we're very excited that you're here joining us today, both Jenica and Sandra. You know, from the perspective of SCRC, we work with family caregivers, and many of them are older adults caring for a loved one, usually a spouse, that is suffering from a chronic disabling condition, often with a cognitive impairment like Alzheimer's disease. And the complex and varied aspects involved in providing care can strain even the most capable of caregivers. Over time, many caregivers will report being overwhelmed. They get agitated, there's anxiety, feelings of distress and isolation, just simply exhaustion from being a caregiver, from having to not only watch over your loved one, but do the chores, sometimes help with personal hygiene, and then if you have children in the home, take care of the children as well as household chores and spouses. And it's just an overwhelming responsibility being a family caregiver. And we know that a lot of family caregivers over time might feel depressed, might have, in addition to the feelings of being overwhelmed and agitated, may have feelings of sadness, of depression over their situation. And that's why this is such an important topic that we're talking about today.
That's right, Roberto. And what I'm seeing is so true for a lot of the caregivers that we are hearing from in the community. A lot of the responses to what's happening right now with COVID, with the social isolation, is that there are a lot of feelings of anxiety, of stress. I mean, caregiving is already difficult as it is, and now we're adding a pandemic to the mix. You know, having to be isolated from your support networks, from your friends, from, you know, we talk about all the time in our classes, practice self-care, go out to a movie, go out with friends. And now we're noticing that you can't do that, or you have to modify how you do that. And also at home, there are no boundaries, really. I know that from my experience, having children at home and having to manage homeschooling, right, remote learning is not easy, and having to work, for example. So we're seeing that a lot of the sandwich generation caregivers are having to balance these different tasks in addition to caring for someone who might have some sort of memory loss, cognitive impairment, dementia, you know, Alzheimer's. And then again, the added challenge of having to go to the store and buy groceries or go get prescriptions. And you can't do that because you can't really take that elderly person with you, because those are the most vulnerable members of our society right now with this pandemic. So then what am I supposed to do as a caregiver? And these are real questions that we're hearing from people. What am I supposed to do now? How am I supposed to do the tasks as a caregiver if it's so limiting?
Well, and thank you, Martha. And I know, Jenica, from the standpoint of the families that we work with, we are often hearing when we survey or we're asking questions, we're often hearing them say how thankful they are for being there for them during these times. The support that we provide is very important. I don't know if you wanted to share some of that with our audience.
Yes, now that we're several months of the stay-at-home order, we have had a lot of positive feedback from the clients that we're checking in. And these are our caregivers who are caring for someone who needs the help and the support and want to be able to thrive without their caregiver presence. So we've just heard anything from just thank you for calling all the way up to being able to provide respite services for the family. So all in all, I just know we're being a really great support system to the family caregivers at this time.
Sandra, I wanted to ask you, you know, again, many of our caregivers are seniors themselves over the age of 65, and they find themselves caring for a loved one with maybe Alzheimer's or a spouse. And again, not only pre-COVID, but you know, just from the standpoint of being a family caregiver, there's already these pressures and it has a major impact on them. So some of them, like I mentioned earlier in our intro, that they might be going through some sadness or depression. And I think it's important for people to understand, you know, what is maybe a little bit normal feelings, emotional feelings during this time, and what might be considered warning signs that they might want to talk to somebody about getting some additional help.
Yes, absolutely. I think one of the things we often struggle with, especially now when the whole sadness, loss, and grief for the lifestyle that we had that we no longer have, we're kind of all experiencing that right now. And many people who are older and have been experiencing various types of loss in their life, it's a little insight into how they might be feeling as well. But it is really important to know the difference between what's to be expected and when you might could really benefit from seeking some additional help. And I think in terms of warning signs, I think there are three critical warning signs of suicide that are really important. So these are things that if you recognize them in yourself or someone else, it really is time to pick up the phone and reach out. And those include talking about death or suicide. It may seem obvious, but it's really, if someone's talking about these things, it's important to take that seriously and really trust your intuition on that. And if a person is seeking methods for self-harm, whether that's purchasing a firearm or spending time online looking for means or investigating or researching means of suicide or self-harm, it's a really important warning sign. And if someone's talking a lot about feeling, or if you are feeling a lot of hopelessness, so I think there's a big difference between feeling sad and recognizing the anxiety that we're all feeling and having that sort of tip into feelings of hopelessness, like it feeling like maybe it's never going to get better. I think a good healthy place to be is this is temporary, things will get better. And if you lose the capacity to feel like things will get better, that's a sign of hopelessness, which really needs to be attended to. It's important to recognize that these types of feelings and depression itself are not normal parts of aging, and that there are really effective treatments that can help. And also just picking up the phone and calling a crisis line or connecting with your resources, just recognizing that you may be feeling hopelessness, but there is hope out there and there is help.
So Sandra, it sounds like we really need to be aware of ourselves, because we know ourselves best, right? So sometimes, yeah, if I just need to take a break, honoring that I need to
absolutely
have permission to take that break and kind of reset, go outside, walk around the block if possible. But also, caregivers know their care receivers best. And even though, yeah, they might not be communicating and verbally saying, I am feeling hopeless right now, but maybe knowing, hey, you know what? My mom seems a little off. Is that kind of what we need to tell ourselves to do more of awareness?
Yes, I think so. And I think part of it is also really trusting what your intuition is telling you. If you feel like something is off, it's really worth having some conversations about that to just tease that apart a little bit and just give the person an opportunity to talk a little bit about how they're feeling. And that, you know, sometimes there can be some resistance to that. So I think it being persistent about that, if you're really feeling like something's off and someone mm-hmm. says, no, I'm fine. It may or may not be the case. If you don't feel like that's true, then it's worth bringing it up. And I think one of the important things to remember too is that even if it's just you asking those questions, it's you communicating just through some simple questions that you care, you're concerned, and that you're there for the person is really important. And for caregivers, you mentioned walking around the block. And I think one of the other things that can sometimes happen is a sense of, oh, yet another set of things I have to do when I have so many things to do already. But the self-care is absolutely crucial. The old oxygen mask analogy, you really can't take care of someone else unless you're coming from a good place yourself. And so I think simplifying your expectations of what self-care means, a walk around the block can be really powerful. 5 minutes, you don't need hours a day to yourself if you can't get that. But it's really important to find something every day that calms you and connects you, even if just briefly, with something that gives you joy.
That is so true. I'm so glad that you mentioned that, Sandra, because you mentioned something, you said fine, the word fine. And that is such an interesting response that a lot of us utilize all the time. How are you doing? I'm fine. How's it going? Fine. But are we truly fine? Is it just an automatic response that we have to things? And I'm sure caregivers are really not fine when they're reaching us and contacting us, but yet that's how they would describe their situation at that moment.
So I would like to add a little bit to what Sandra was saying, and you were saying about asking questions and checking in with someone. And I think that's really important to point out that any caregiver that gets connected with the organization does get connected to a family consultant or a care manager who is asking the caregiver these important questions. We do check in about a caregiver's emotional support. How are they doing overall? We do even have a scale that they fill out to determine where they are as far as coping with depression, which will then in turn allow additional questions for the family consultant to ask them. And then based off those responses, we're connecting the caregiver with either resources, talking about maybe it's time to connect with a counselor or get them some other emotional support by seeing going to one of our caregiver support groups. So we are asking those questions to try to see where a caregiver is as far as having that emotional support.
Thank you, Jenica. And you know, our families, the majority of our families are dealing with or providing care to someone with very complex conditions. I think an average of about 10 to 11 different activities of daily living that they're helping with. And it just gets really overwhelming. And, you know, it's hard to take them away from that responsibility, especially right now. And I think that's why it's so important to take that break, to get help, to seek that respite service, whether it's through our program or to get, because we have respite programs that are available to family caregivers that people have access to, but also to get other people involved. And one of the biggest problems that we see with family caregivers is, as you were saying earlier, Martha, as you said earlier, Sandra, that when they ask, how are you doing? Or I'm fine. And the reality is that we try to teach caregivers, family members, to be very specific about their needs. You know, I just need you to come and give me a hour break so I can do that walk. You know, how to engage the people So we do a lot of education on that standpoint. And I know our clinical team does, our family consultants do, when they're seeing that the family member is scoring really high on, let's say, our depression scale that we use, as well as what, you know, the conversations that they're having with them, they're trying to help them come up with solutions to help reduce that stress, give them that break.
Sandra, so I'm wondering if, you know, we talked about some of the warning signs or what to look for. Let's say a family caregiver identifies some of these. What's the next step?
Well, I'm glad you asked that question. So I think one of the first things you do is to identify if someone is having these problems. So you may be having a sense that something is off, and you may have noticed certain things that make you feel that way. So the next step is to have a conversation with the person to really get an understanding of where they're coming from. The Know the Signs campaign has a really good website I wanted to make sure I mentioned as we're talking about warning signs. So the three parts of the Know the Signs campaign are know the signs, find the words, and reach out. And the website is at suicideispreventable.org. And so I talked about a few warning signs that are really, really important, but there's other things that if you might have observed that you may question, and there's information about those on the website. And then the second part is find the words, and it's about having the conversation with someone that you're concerned about. And it's really one of the most important parts of your conversation is making sure you've found a time and a place where you can really listen and have the time to talk with the person about what they're feeling. And it's also important to ask very directly, are you thinking about suicide? And that can be one of the hardest questions to ask. It's almost something to rehearse. To say the words out loud a lot when you're getting ready to have this conversation, because many of us have a fear that if we ask someone directly about suicide, that we may put the idea in their heads or somehow make the situation worse, when in fact, what research tells us is that it usually has a much, much better effect than that. And it can really help a person to open up. What it does is communicates to that person that you are willing to have a conversation about a difficult topic. Many people suffer from stigma around having mental health challenges or thinking about suicide, and they're afraid to share that with people. And if you come right out with it with your direct question, what that says is, I can go there with you, I'm here with you. And it can really help that person to know that you're someone to talk about, who is willing to talk about it. And it's also important to be aware of the resources that are available to support you. So in this conversation, you are not alone. The Suicide Prevention Lifeline is a national resource that has call centers all around the country, including in San Diego County. And these are available 24/7, and trained counselors answer the phone. And this is for people who may be thinking about suicide, but it's also for people who are concerned about somebody. So if you're really concerned and you just need to talk to someone about what you're seeing, call it. The San Diego Crisis Access and Crisis Line is 1-888-724-7240. There is also in California, we're lucky to have one of the only, actually the only crisis center for older adults, which is called the Friendship Line, and that's 800-971-0016. So calling these resources, getting some support, and encouraging the person you're concerned about to use them as well.
Yeah, thank you so much for sharing those resources, Sandra. I know that for older adults, I was reading a report from NAMI, and it was talking about almost all but a handful of suicide attempts for older adults are related to depression. And I was also looking at some of the warning signs of depression, and also that many of the warning signs are rarely recognized among the individual themselves or their family around them, because as you were saying, they look at it as a normal part. And it's almost like what we say when people start showing signs of dementia, symptoms of dementia, people confuse it with normal part of aging. I mean, what are a few things that people can look at as far as the warning signs for, like, when somebody might be dealing with depression, since that's possibly the number one cause of suicide attempts for older adults?
Sure. Yes. I think that there is a strong overlap with many of the warning signs of suicide and depression. So again, these feelings, that the hopelessness is really a keystone of that, because again, what it's doing is you're feeling that things are not going to get better. And that's a mindset that can be very dangerous. Not being able to see a way out of things, feeling like you're a burden to others. And it can also manifest itself in a lot of physical symptoms. So changes, things that are changes from what's sort of normal for a person. So that can be changes in sleep, whether it's insomnia or sleeping all the time, very, very low energy, fatigue and exhaustion that doesn't seem to be related to, obviously related to a physical health issue, as well as changes in appetite. So eating a lot all the time, or refusing to eat anything at all, just not really feeling like eating, as well as changes in use of substances. So we're hearing a lot in these COVID times about increases in use of substances, especially alcohol, and particularly for older adults, alcohol use, increasing alcohol use is really a problem. And there are some pretty strong connections between use of alcohol and suicide risk in particular, because people use it as a form of a less healthy form of self-medication. But it also inhibits inhibits people in certain ways that might cause them to do something more rash than they might if they were sober. So changes in substance use is another important warning. Substance use is another important one to look at.
Thank you so much, Sandra. You know, I think bottom line is identify the warning signs, talk about it, and get some help. Yeah. And I think that's a big message from all of us today to our audiences who might be struggling with some feelings of helplessness or sadness, or even, diagnosed depression right now during these times. So this is such a great topic, and we could go on all day, but that's actually all the time we have left for this edition of Let's Talk Caregiving. I want to thank Martha for co-hosting another important and stimulating discussion today, along with our guests, Sandra Black and Jenica McEwen. And I want to remind our audience that if you're providing support to a loved one, you don't have to do this alone. Asking for help is not a sign of weakness. It is a sign of strength. Just go to our website at scrc.care or call us at 1-800-827-1008. All our programs and services are currently available virtually. You can also follow us on Facebook for more podcasts. SCRC is a nonprofit organization. We provide services due to the generosity of our donors and community partners. If you'd like to make a tax-deductible donation, please go to our website and click on the Donate tab. And remember, SCRC is here for you.
Caring for those who care for others.
Thank you.